Kim McNicholas on Innovation, spotlighting successful entrepreneurs, innovators, investors, and industry experts. Their stories and insights can help you become better informed, better educated, and a better investor. Your host is Emmy Award-winning anchor, reporter, and writer Kim McNicholas. Kim has been a journalist at Forbes magazine, a Fox News Channel contributor, vetted more than 3,000 startups, and has been a mentor for entrepreneurs around the globe. Now, Kim McNicholas on Innovation.
Welcome to the show. Paris has attracted entrepreneurs from around the globe for its inaugural Techstars Paris Accelerator. Techstars has accelerators such as this one all over the world. The chain started in Boulder, Colorado in 2003, and since then, it's expanded to include classes for Techstars Disney, Virgin Techstars, as well as Techstars Berlin, one in Toronto, and even one in Cape Town, South Africa. And that's just to name a few. Techstars has accepted more than 1,000 companies into its programs, companies which have collectively raised more than $3 billion and have a market cap of more than $8 billion. And those numbers will only increase with the new class coming out of the Techstars Paris Accelerator, which is a mentorship-driven program backed by French companies. For 13 weeks, a specially curated group of 10 startups from around the globe participated in more than 200 meetings, workshops, and mentoring sessions. And the first class is graduating. At the top of their class, I have four companies from that program we'll be talking to you today, and the first is Muros. It's a smart-driven assistant for customer service needs. The company is all about combing the data from emails, phone transcripts, and posts on social media and making sense of all of it. Benoit Gagnon is the CEO. Hi, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, Kim. Thanks for hosting me today.
Thank you. Congratulations. Tell us, what does your technology look like? I mean, okay, at the fundamental level, yes, it's a software. That's a start.
That's a start. Actually, Muros is a platform in the cloud. It's powered by artificial intelligence using techniques such as machine learning, natural language processing, or sentiment analysis. And it interfaces easily with industry standards such as Salesforce or Zendesk or Desk.com to collect their data. And then it analyzes it and transforms it to serve every layer of a customer service organization. We aim to make customer service smarter and faster.
Yeah, we all want that. So how in the world did you discover this problem of just so much information embedded in phone transcripts and posts on social media and phone transcripts and phone transcripts and more phone transcripts?
And chat transcripts.
Those darn chatbots are adding to the problem now, right?
Absolutely. Actually, I worked in customer service myself for more than 15 years, managing customer service organizations in B2B and B2C. At every level, I started as a support engineer for a software vendor, and then I made my way up the hierarchy. This is how I came up with the idea of Muros, because I always considered that the customer service data is a gold mine and certainly one of the most underused corporate assets. And I think that by digging into this gold mine, we can really help the agents themselves being smarter, saving them time when they are handling customer requests. We can reveal new insights to the manager so that they no longer make decisions based on partial information, resulting in suboptimal decisions.
So what exactly are you combing for in this data? What data are you pulling out? What words are you pulling out?
So it's not only based on words. We are using machine learning techniques. That is, we actually look at the chat transcripts or phone transcripts or emails, and we look at the whole piece of text of the conversation. And then we can automatically categorize a customer request as it's coming in, so it's routed faster to the right agent, ensuring at the same time a better reporting to the management team. Like one of our first customers helping a marketplace already saved 50% of their first reply times. That is, they cut by a half the time their customers had to wait for a reply from customer service. And at the same time, we improved their productivity by 10%. So we use the data in different aspects, either to automate tasks through machine learning, either to reveal new insights. For example, we are using artificial intelligence to put a specific focus on those can dancers, those predefined dancers that customer service teams are using a lot to be more efficient. And we analyze them to determine how they are used by the agents. Are the agents using them as such? That is, it's a kind of copy paste. Or do they take the time to add a personal touch to the reply? Or do they use their own set of custom libraries? We shed some light on those topics, and we help the management teams to fine tune their library of condensers to improve the customer satisfaction as well as improving the productivity of the team.
So, what is your current traction?
So today we have almost a dozen of customers. They are based in France, in Germany, the UK, and in the US. We work with companies in the US like Adore Me, online e-commerce, lingerie e-commerce.
Did you go after lingerie first?
actually, we sent a cold email.
It had to be asked. I mean, that would Adore Me. We all know Adore Me.
That's my French side, maybe.
You got to go the romantic route first when you hit the U.S. I gotcha. But so you have about 12 companies. But so what is the actual sticking point for you in terms of getting companies to adopt your product?
So there is lots of evangelization to do. Like lots of customers, lots of companies are not even aware of the potential of artificial intelligence today. So they do not always have the budgets in the first place, but usually after a trial or a demo, they do see the benefits and the potential, and all of a sudden there are budgets.
How did you price this? I mean, having never done anything like this before, how were you able to price this for the market? What were those conversations like in your boardroom, maybe with friends of yours, potential customers? How did you come up with that pricing structure?
That's not an easy exercise. We are first-time entrepreneurs, and our team combines domain expertise as well as technical expertise. My co-founders did some PhD research in artificial intelligence. So none of us had any sales nor marketing background. So we looked at the market. There are some startups focusing on the same business as ours. Mm-hmm. And we managed to get an idea of how much they were selling. And then we tested our prices with some customers. And we are still looking for the right price, to be completely honest. We are still in the product market fit phase, but we are getting there.
How long have you been in business?
We started the company in April 2016, but for the first 10 months, we worked with our first customers to fine-tune the technology. So we
and
really
were
started...
they paying customers right away?
Yeah.
Because I noticed you haven't actually gone, I mean, to be in operation since April of 2016 and you haven't even raised money. I mean, you did take a Techstars investment, but that's only in the last 13 weeks.
Absolutely.
So how have you been able to do that?
We've been bootstrapping so far and raised a little.
Maxing out your credit cards. I know the story. How many credit cards?
Well,
expanded credit limits. But
that kind of thing.
But you have been charging, right, for the product. So you've been able to get some revenue coming in.
Absolutely. We believe that we are delivering value and that there is no reason why we would give the technology for free. So even though we were not charging our first customers a high amount, we were charging them.
And I think that's the way to go. Definitely on the right track. And you're planning to close a round of funding by the end of Q1 of 2018?
Absolutely, yes. We are looking for 1 million euros to close our first seed round.
Definitely, you're going to need that for global expansion. Thank you so much, Benoit Gagnon, for joining us. Coming up, we'll meet another startup at the top of the new Techstars Paris Accelerator Class of 2017. So stay with us.
Now, back to Kim McNicholas on Innovation.
Welcome back to the show. Today, we are featuring startups at the top of the Techstars Paris Accelerator's inaugural class, basically once to watch in 2018 from around the globe. And they include Terramanta. Their software takes geopolitical information, financial news, energy news, financial markets, as well as market fundamentals, and truly helps companies impacted by the volatility of the crude oil markets make more informed decisions. Leon Katovich is CEO. Leon, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, Kim, thank you for having me.
Where are you located?
We are currently in Paris, but we're based in Irvine, California.
Oh, wow. Fantastic. So how in the world did you come up with this idea?
Well, so very briefly, you know, crude oil is the most volatile commodity in the world. So what's
it
interesting is that in 2015, oil prices dropped from $100 to $28 a barrel. And companies which depend on oil, gasoline, jet fuel face enormous economic risks. And so what's interesting also is that in 2014, the world spent almost $15 billion on resource and energy information, but did not necessarily learn more because in 2015, companies like United Airlines lost $1 billion on closing fuel hedges. So that's $1 billion.
Right, but people don't realize, I mean, when you're looking at airline tickets, you should look at the crude oil market, see what they're doing, and then know in the next few months what's going to happen to those airline prices.
Absolutely. This is one of the major cost components. And so we know now that in 2015, irreversible and unprecedented geopolitical changes completely transformed the behavior of oil markets. And so, but geopolitics or news is simply text analyzed by human analysts, and they have a very limited capacity to analyze news. Our software actually analyzes 3,000 news a day. It also analyzes all of the fundamentals and also all of the price actions in the market. And so right now we are tracking about 23,000 topics or drivers which influence oil markets every single day without any biases.
But not to say that the fake news problem really has transcended into energy news, but in a world with so much bias in media today, where the new journalism is to simply pick an argument and find only the facts that support that argument, how does that impact your results?
Sure. Well, so we use machine learning to basically correlate all of the topics that influence oil markets. And so what's interesting is that we look at specifically topics that that influence oil market fundamentals. And of course, changes in the fundamentals also change prices. So we actually look at what topics over time consistently influence oil prices. So it's actually very hard to inject fake news into this market because the world of oil is very transparent, well, to some extent. But when you look at the fundamentals over time, the fundamentals changes, meaning supply, demand, inventory, distribution, exports, imports, is really the real driver of what influences our prices. And the markets react pretty quickly, as an example, to changes in supply.
I would think it would still be a concern. I mean, if you go back to the Enron days and there was it was actually proven that many of their traders would get on with the trade magazines and publications and actually put out fake information in order to game the markets. How do you prevent that from impacting your results?
Sure. Well, we look at many different dimensions. As an example, in the oil world, there are a number of things that you actually have to look at. For example, it's not just supply, demand, inventory, distribution. You actually have to look at tanker movements and of course, all the other things that at times traders do. So there are so many dimensions that it's actually very difficult to inject fake news, if you will, into a single dimension. You actually have to do it everywhere, which is extremely difficult. So that's one of the things we like about oil is that it's a very complicated business, yet it's driven by very, very precise fundamentals and, of course, market reactions.
So why do you decide to actually start this? And what makes you the best person to start a company like this?
Sure. Well, we're outsiders, that's one. And so we noticed the opportunity. So we're very good at analytics. And so when we looked at this particular market, we actually realized that the oil industry has been doing largely the same thing for close to five decades. So OPEC actually right now cannot control prices.
And that's the oil producers. So the Organization of Oil Producers from around the world.
This is correct. And so what's interesting is that you could literally look at supply and also demand 10 years ago, and you could actually understand where prices are heading. Today, mm-hmm. It's extremely difficult. Russia, as an example, is now the dominant oil producer, and OPEC has to listen to Russia, which completely changes the behavior of oil markets. As an example, China has been slowing down Saudi imports because they actually want to send a message. We want to pay for oil in yuan, which never happened before. These are the kinds of geopolitical changes that are happening as we speak. And in fact, they are irreversible, which means that the world at large does not have a reference point on what's going to happen in the future. The only way to operate is to actually analyze almost everything and then try to understand how similar events influence oil prices. So
what does your platform actually look like?
So we do essentially three things. We analyze unstructured data and also structured data according to a specific domain model. So the first thing we did is we built a domain model that looks at the oil markets. And the engine actually is quite generic. So the goal is ultimately to move beyond oil and to look at things such as an example, equities, which are highly dependent on commodities. Tesla is another really good example. It depends on lithium and other commodities. And without understanding lithium supply chain, one cannot follow Tesla.
And who are your customers?
Large investment banks, commodity trading companies, also traders, also commodity price risk advisory companies. And in fact, in some cases, even government agencies that are looking at geopolitical risk through the exposure in commodity markets.
And what's your traction so far?
So we have one paying customer. It's a very large oil company. We're very happy to have them as a customer, and also four trial customers that are actively looking at our current release and also waiting for our next release, which is coming in December.
Oh, that's really exciting. Well, I wish you the best of luck. If people want to find out more, where can they go?
Terramonta.com, excuse me. So we are always available.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Leon. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Kim.
Coming up right after my hot holiday picks of the week, we'll meet another startup at the top of the new Techstars Paris Accelerator Class of 2017. Stay with us. What are the hottest practical holiday gifts for your favorite car owner? Hi, I'm Kim McNicholas with the Innovators Network. Here are my top picks brought to you by CarDash.com. No longer will you lose French fries down the side of your seats eating on the go with a car seat gap filler. Yes, a car seat gap filler. They squeeze between the seat and the center console to keep out the crumbs, the spare change, your license or credit cards that, accidentally sometimes slip out. You can find a car seat gap filler on Amazon.com. Or how about a car jump starter that fits right into your glove box? No longer will you ever need another car to get your car running again. Simply plug the rechargeable glove box car jump starter into your car's cigarette lighter, and you have enough charge to get you home. You can find that at SharperImage.com. And dash cams are all the rage these days. Why go without one when they come in handy in case of an accident? The TwoGuard Mini Dash Cam can be found on Amazon.com, and it uses Sony technology to seamlessly record constantly in a loop. When an accident occurs, dash cam will automatically save the video. Search for TwoGuard, that's TOGUARD, Mini Dash Cam on Amazon.com. And don't forget, no need to put a damper on holiday plans because of a car breakdown. Let CarDash.com's concierges be your auto advocate. Go to CarDash.com and they'll come to you. Happy holidays, everyone.
Now, back to Kim McNicholas on Innovation.
Welcome back to the show. Many industries are required to comply with anti-money laundering, counter-terrorist financing, and know-your-customer requirements. They rely on manual, face-to-face verifications and controls, making the onboarding process time-consuming and expensive. In banks, more than 50% of prospective customers never even complete initial onboarding because of that. Well, our next company has a solution. The company's name is SnapSwap, snapswap.eu. Denis Kiselev is the CEO, and he is here to explain their digital onboarding solution. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Congratulations. Another startup at the top of the new Techstars Paris Accelerator Class of 2017.
Wow, it's exciting. We are very happy to be in Paris. We were selected as 10 companies out of 1,000.
Why were you selected? Why do you think you were selected? What is so cool about your company?
We are the best. We are using unique technology. We have great market traction. And we have an excellent team, outstanding team of professionals who have experience in banking, finance, compliance. So we are really well set up to attack these markets, this old-fashioned way to onboard the customers when you want to your customers to go to an office, to open an account, to show a passport, to show the face. No, it's not going to be like this anymore. We do it all on mobile in minutes rather than days.
Yeah, I mean, it's not only hard for the companies themselves, and they definitely lose out. As I said, more than 50% of prospective customers never complete initial onboarding. I mean, I'm one of them. It's so annoying sometimes with some of these just on and on processes. And I understand how important the verification process really is, but it's annoying. So how are you solving it? Explain in layman's terms how it would work.
Yes, absolutely. So we are working with financial services, the most regulated and the difficult vertical to work with because of risks and regulatory requirements. So what we do is we automate the whole process of onboarding using modern technologies. We use computer vision for document verification. Just scan your doc with your camera of mobile device or a computer, and we can clearly define whether it's good, whether it's consistent with the template, whether it's original, not manipulated, etc. We use biometrics. We analyze your face, and we make sure that the face is the same as the face on the document.
Now, is this something that you do, in a sense, you do this live? So during the onboarding process, there is a camera that you can use your camera, but it is through your software that they would use your camera. So you can have the facial recognition technologies built in.
Exactly. It's all real time. It's all fully automated based on algorithms. So you just take your mobile, look at the camera, we see your face, we take the picture, we do the analysis, and we know if you are a live person or a picture or video recording, and we know how much you are similar today to your photo on your passport.
So during the process, I'm sure in creating this solution, you had to have had those frustrating, bang your head against the wall moments where you're like, ah, I can't believe this can be hacked. Can you share some of those?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Knew there were some. You're like, oh, shoot, you can get through. It's hackable. Oh, darn.
You know, face recognition is actually well developed in several algorithms. But when you look at the document, it's one thing when you have a document in hand. It's totally different when you make a picture of the document and you still want to know whether the document is real, whether it is not manipulated, because modern technologies allow to do very sophisticated manipulation, like changing expiration dates on the driver's license. It's very easy, and there is no human eye that can recognize it. So we employed algorithms that allow us to identify even the smallest manipulation that are invisible for human eyes.
How many times did you have to go back to the drawing board to get that perfected?
Oh, well, many, many, many times.
And still, things are changing. The technology is getting, the hacking technology is getting more and more sophisticated. I remember there was a movie, I think it was called Catch Me If You Can. I think it was with Matt Damon and Tom Hanks. I think that was
the
one.
That is true. That is one that I watched like maybe hundreds of times, because it's exactly about this, how you do the fake document and then how you can distinct the fake document from the real document, how you can identify it. And for us, the problem was that we wanted to do it real time, fully automated, so the process will be available 24/7 for all customers all over the world. So that was difficult, and we solved it.
And so you currently have 28 clients that are currently in the pipeline. 8 clients are in advanced negotiations. 4 are already paying for the solution. How long have you been in business?
We launched in January, so it's less than 12 months, and we have amazing traction. Among those clients that you mentioned, those are one of top 10 banks in Europe.
Wow.
There is the biggest insurance company in France. There are new financial services, like companies doing cryptocurrencies, ICOs. So we see that the market is looking for the solution like ours, and that's great.
And that's right. But how did you actually get in the door? These companies are pitched this kind of technology all the time. How did you get in the door at one of the top banks in Europe?
Two things. First of all, I have great experience. I'm in financial services in C-level positions for over 20 years.
Okay. So you have an entire, you know, little black book of these contacts.
I know how to talk with people in banks because I was there for 20 years.
Connections. Yeah, they have had connections.
Connections. It's about culture. It's about culture because, you know, when I go to, when I sit in my office, I'm in jeans and I'm in t-shirt. But when I go to a bank, I wear a tie, I wear a suit,
right,
and I talk different because I know how to convince people and I know how to navigate these huge organizations to make them move. That's one thing. But on the other hand, we have to be compliant. We have to be fully legally compliant with the regulation. And that's why we get the license. We spend our money and our time on getting licensed in Europe as electronic money institution. So now the companies like banks and insurance, they can outsource the process to us because they understand how we are regulated.
And a lot of these CIOs or chief security officers or whatever, these major organizations actually can't afford to turn a company like yours away. If they don't know exactly what's out there and they turn away a real viable solution that could have prevented something, they're going to be liable.
For them, or fired. You know, it's always, for them, it's always a choice whether to build something in-house or to buy the solution from us or from one of our competitors. And honestly speaking, we are very fast to markets. We allow to build something in just 4 weeks. And we are much less expensive than building things in-house. So that's why we are winning tenders. That's why we are winning competitions.
You sound like a really, really tasty acquisition for a major company. Who do you think could be a really good suitor?
You know, we are not actually looking for acquisition.
You're never looking.
Yeah.
It kind of finds you.
They just come, yeah. But for us, it's important to be independent player on the markets.
Right, that's
because
true.
When we talk with financial services, you know, we could not afford to be affiliated with a particular bank or a particular group.
No, but I think a big security company, a company that makes a huge security solution, would be really interested in making you a part of their overall package.
Yeah, I would say technology providers or big consultancies. Mm-hmm. We are working with them on distribution agreements. They sell our solution. Like now, for example, Deloitte is running all around the world showing our solution to
Wow.
their customer base.
Wow.
That's very exciting. We got the agreement with them and we have a solution that is branded Deloitte powered by SnapSwap. That's a great achievement. So those are the guys for whom we are really, really big component of the business.
And you're currently raising a Series A. And is this your first raise? Have you done any seed or are you completely bootstrapped up to this point? Aside from Techstars.
Yes, we did the seed round. Actually, myself and my co-founder, Natalia, we worked on the West Coast in Seattle and San Francisco before. Since 2012, we built a company in cryptocurrencies. We made a very good exit, and we invested a lot in the companies ourselves. There are also angel investors whom we brought in, and then there is a Techstar and there is a Partech, one of the biggest French venture funds who invested in us during the Techstars program. But currently, you are right. We are raising Series A because we see the great opportunity on the market, even though we are cash positive now. But we
Oh,
still
already? That's very quick. Good job on your part.
Less than 12 months. That's amazing.
I always tell people, you know, what is the best advice that you have for other entrepreneurs in terms of learning from what you did? Because sometimes they don't listen to me. I always tell them you need to make a product that you can literally make money on right away. So you're not sitting here for 10 years losing, just acquiring followers. Make a product that makes money.
It's different. B2B, B2C, different things. When you're in B2C, you can afford to be in cash negative and just burning money while acquiring customers. In B2B, you literally have to make money from the first day. B2B is a different space. And that was our motto. We created the product that was profitable from the very first implementation.
Even your beta testers were paying customers?
Yeah. We never did any proof of concept for free. We always charge for it, and we charge for it with a healthy margin.
Were there customers out there or potential customers that said, "Oh no, you're new software. Just give it to us for free. We'll test it out and we'll give you feedback." Everybody wants something for free.
Yes, that's for sure. But in our space, first of all, the demand is great because everyone understands that 5 years from now, people will not go to banks anymore. They will not go to buy insurance. They will do everything online.
Yep.
So now all banks, all insurance companies, they are all looking for digital solutions. And there are not very many of them on the market.
Thank you.
And so that's why it's easy for us.
I think Abra would be a great customer for you guys as well. Thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. If people want more information on SnapSwap, go to snapswap.eu. We'll be back in just a moment.
Now, back to Kim McNicholas on Innovation.
Welcome back to the show. We're featuring the top four startups and tech stars. Paris Accelerator's inaugural class, they just got through a 13-week mentorship program backed by French companies. Included in this elite group is Wakio. Wakio is a software-as-a-service platform to bring real-time visibility on B2B transport flows, sea, air, road. Julian Cote is the CEO. Welcome, Julian.
Hi, Kim. Thanks for the invitation.
Here, I want you to paint the picture a little bit more as to what your company does, because my first question is really, how in the world did this not exist before? Or are you literally competing against something that's already out there in the market?
Well, so many people will think about what you do in the B2C world when you order something on B2C on Amazon, for instance. Basically, what we do is the same, but for the B2B world. So if you consider leading international companies, they all have global supply chains, which are very complex.
Right.
And what we do is that we help them reach visibility, so to know where the goods are and when they arrive at destination, basically.
Isn't that what you can do through FedEx or DHL or any of the UPS?
So,
the tracking numbers?
Yes, these players are more involved into the B2C parcel market, and our focus is kind of different. It's called freight forwarding. Basically, anything above 150 kilos you want to send is going through freight forwarding. And that's a much different market, which is very fragmented and still a bit old-fashioned, so a lot of outdated IT systems that bring it much more complicated than what you do on Amazon, for instance.
Okay, break it down for us a little bit more. Freight forwarding, what is it? Who uses it? You were saying it's pretty heavy stuff. We're talking like cars.
Exactly. So our customers are the industrial shippers themselves, meaning, for instance, companies in aerospace, automotive, like you mentioned, or chemistry. And if those guys want to import goods from China, for instance, to Europe or to the U.S., they will use what we call freight forwarder. Basically, it's kind of like a travel agency that would coordinate all the carriers coming from China. So they will be using four or five different companies to import goods from China to the U.S. So that's a very complicated process with no interconnection in between all those IT systems.
So
that's why it's very complicated.
So we're talking even companies like Walmart could be a customer.
Exactly.
Because they have a lot of containers that they bring over from China.
Sure. Yeah, so companies in retail are very industrial companies in aerospace, chemistry, pharmaceuticals.
So you have global coverage of 90% of the containers all over the world. What does that actually mean? Where does that put you? Because you're only working with four international companies in 10 countries. I would think there'd be a lot more than that out there.
Yeah, so we launched commercially in September. And, well, we are already working with four international companies, which is quite good, obviously. What we do in terms of technology is that we use satellite data to track ships and planes. We connect to tracked GPS systems for the inland sections. And we also leverage sometimes the data from IoT devices, which are becoming more and more growing into this industrial world. So there is a lot of potential into this IoT section as well.
But you have global coverage, you said, of 90% of containers all over the world. Is that through just your four customers?
No. So basically, this is our technology.
Just through what the technology overall.
Yeah, that's using satellite data and also requesting all the shipping lines' websites. We're able to match 90% of our containers all over the world.
Gotcha. And so do you have an example of a customer who's shared with you a story about how much their business has improved by using your technology?
Yes. So basically what we bring are three key aspects. First one is for them to anticipate. If you are an automotive company, for instance, if you stop your production line, just one day, this means up to 15 million euros a day. So that's very expensive. And if you miss critical goods, that's really a pity for the business. Mm-hmm. So we send them alerts for them to anticipate. So that's very easy. And on the other way, most of companies, what they do is that they increase inventories to be able to not to have stops in the production line. And so if you are a global company, you may have several billion euros of inventories and you need to finance it. So we help them reduce those cycles by 30% more or less.
And why is it that there hasn't been something like this available before?
Freight is a very fragmented market. So what's hard is to work with old-fashioned companies and at the same time to be able to consolidate them into a central dashboard. Mm. So there is a lot of integrating different IT systems and, to find proactive carriers and transport providers to work with.
Any resistance that you've experienced from potential customers where they're like, we don't need this?
Yeah, I mean, for SMEs, for instance, that's not really a subject because we're talking, if you deal with 50 shipments a year, mm-hmm. you can do it manually, and I'd say that's perfect. But if you manage hundreds of thousands of flows, like big industrial companies, here is our sweet spot. I mean, it's very, very relevant to them.
And so far, where are you at in terms of funding? You've gotten Techstars funding, of course.
Yeah, we get Techstars funding and Partec funding as well through the program. Before, we are very lucky in France because the ecosystem is much more structured and we have a lot of public funding.
Oh, wow.
So a lot to start with it.
That's exciting. Are you planning to come to the U.S. to do any sort of raise?
So we are currently raising a seed round, and I think it will be in France more or less because we are, the ecosystem is moving fast. But for sure, the next step will be in the U.S. because if we want to grow and to be something big tomorrow, we need to go to the U.S. for sure.
Fantastic. And if people want to find out more about Wakeia, where can they go? What's the website?
On our website, so www.wakeia.co.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it, Julian. I hope everyone has a great weekend. Thank you to all the Techstars companies for joining us.
This has been Kim McNicholas on Innovation. You can connect with Kim on Facebook/Kim McNicholas or email kimmcnicholas@gmail.com. Be sure to join us again next Friday at 1 for Kim McNicholas on Innovation.